And if I believe that I can help this person maybe better than the next guy, or I just believe I can deliver a really good service to this person, I'm not going to turn them down.
Hello and welcome to the Physical Preparation Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Robertson, and I'm joined on the line today by Dylan Gutiel. Passionate about sports since childhood, Dylan played football and rugby in high school and continued his rugby career at Springfield College, where he earned a degree in exercise science. He started personal training right out of college for 5 years until he got frustrated with the corporate training environment and decided there was a better way to deliver coaching that could have a bigger impact on more people's lives. So in 2016, he and his college classmate and rugby co-captain Jared decided to open Flight Performance and Fitness. Dylan's main drive is to build Flight to the best possible training facility it can be so it can help more people reach their personal goals and potential. Now, this was an awesome show. We cover all the basic stuff, but a couple key points and a couple key areas that I know you're going to want to hone in on. Number one, the art of exercise selection. Such a critical piece of the program design puzzle. We talk about why Dylan is such a big believer in really diving in and knowing your exercises. Number two, we talk a lot about developing young coaches and Dylan's passion for helping the next generation of young coaches develop. And last but not least, a really interesting part of the show, we talk about why Dylan and Jared have decided not to niche down. While a lot of people are very focused on one specific sport or just Gen Pop clients over 40, they are very broad, very wide-ranging in their client base, and we're going to talk about why they decided to do that. So we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll jump into this awesome new episode with Dylan Gutiel. Have you heard about the new IFAST University? When Bill Hartman and I created IFASTU in 2016, we had one primary goal: to make IFAST University an elite resource for trainers, coaches, and rehab professionals across the globe. Continuing education is something that we've always taken great pride in here at IFAST, and we wanted to create an extension of that with IFASTU. Because here's the thing. There are tons of great trainers and coaches out there who legitimately want to learn from us and get better, but don't have the ability to come to IFAST and do it in person. So whether you're a young, up-and-coming coach who's just getting started, or a seasoned vet of the training game, if you want to get better each and every month, I'm sure we have an option for you. We now have two membership options at IFASTU based on your needs and goals: Standard and Elite. Our Standard option is like the Netflix of training Con Ed. Here, you'll have access to the complete IFASTU archive, which has well over 100 in-depth videos on topics like program design, coaching, and anatomy and movement. Plus, every month you'll get a new piece of content from a world-class coach, someone that's going to help you take your game to the next level. But if you're really looking to fast-track your progress, you may want to get in on IFASTU Elite. Here, you'll not only have access to the archives and monthly content drops like standard users, but you also have direct access to both Bill and I each and every month. Between two monthly Q&A calls, access to over 100 previously recorded Q&A calls, and direct access to both of us and our elite group of trainers and coaches via our private forum, this is a surefire way to get around the right people and level up fast. If you're interested in learning more, just head over to ifastuniversity.com. Again, that's ifastuniversity.com. We hope to see you in the U soon. Dylan, man, thanks so much for coming on the show here today. Super pumped to have you on and chat with you a little bit. Could you start by just telling us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. So I grew up in Brookline, Mass. Ended up going to Springfield College for exercise science. I played rugby all 4 years there. Played football in high school. I've been powerlifting for 10 years, just about. I know you did some powerlifting yourself.
Yep. I did. Seems like another lifetime ago, but I did.
Yeah. I just got back into Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I've done some form of martial arts most of my life. I grew up doing Kung Fu when I was a little kid. And then now I'm the owner of Flight Performance and Fitness, which is in Waltham, Mass. It's a little mix of athletes and Gen Pop and a little bit of everything in between. And I've been coaching for around 15 years now.
That's very cool. Very cool. So talk to me, what got you started in the world of physical prep? Was it just getting ready for football and rugby, or what got you started in this
This pretty much, unfortunately, I have the typical strength coach story. I know it's probably on every podcast, but played sports growing up, was never super talented, wasn't the most athletic, wasn't the biggest, wasn't the fastest. So I spent a lot of time in the gym, even like really young, like seventh grade, I think I started.
Yeah.
I was also a little bit of a chubby kid, so that kind of pushed me into it too. And yeah, and then throughout high school, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I wasn't a particularly good student. I struggled in school a little bit. And so the only thing that I was really in love with was training and sports too, football and everything. But that whole process, I always just loved and saw that there was exercise science was a major. Didn't really know what it really meant at the time, but I was like, I'm not going to sit in an office, I don't think. So I'll give this a try. Yeah, I went to Springfield College. And I think that's really where I fell in love with it. If you know anything about Springfield, it is a melting pot for strength and conditioning. There's the people that go there are even at a young age, just really passionate about it. And so being around people that were so in that and so invested in learning and bettering themselves with that, learning more about strength and conditioning, that's where I got the love for it. And then I think it really stuck when I had some internships toward the end, my senior year and a little bit after. And I got a little taste of that, the private strength conditioning sector. Yeah. And that's where I was, this is something I love and I'm going to do the rest of my life. It really spoke to me just working with, I did a little bit of both. One of my internships was a little bit more gen pop oriented. I was running more like small group adult classes. And then one was way more athlete based, pretty much all athletes. And I really fell in love with both of it. I loved working with an older population. I felt like that was really rewarding and also really challenging in a different way. And then obviously athletes, you have that little extra performance element that's where you're doing things a little more advanced, a little more high pace. Yeah. So I love that too.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. People probably don't know this, but people were always surprised when they would come to the gym and we'd have interns and they're like, oh, where are you from? And they would expect Ball State or IU or Purdue, Butler, something that's close. And we would consistently be our two highest performers over the years were Springfield and Buffalo. And so people are like, why do you guys get so many people from Springfield? I'm like, I don't know, man. Maybe these people are just locked in. But yeah, we had seven or eight kids. That might be a slight stretch, but at least five or six, I think more along the lines of seven to eight from Springfield College over the years, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I think you don't know when you're in it. But then now that I've had a lot of interns from other different places, I realize how good my education was. Like, as much as you're not really prepared until you're in it and you're in the fire and you're getting a lot of coaching experience. I realized that, that education was definitely different than a lot of other people got.
For sure. Okay. So last but not least, you do the internships and you've been coaching 15 years. So fill in those gaps for me. Like, what does the career path look like and what have your stops been along the way?
Yeah. As I said, the internships, I got a little taste of that private sector, what that looks like. And I liked that model. I liked the ideas around it. But when I got out of school, I moved back home and there weren't a whole lot of like real good private strength and conditioning places in Boston at the time. It was just a long time ago. And I got a personal training job at a health club. And I did that for about 4.5 years, honestly.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And yeah. And I think it gets personal training at a health club kind of gets looked down upon a little bit in the strength and conditioning industry, I think. And honestly, I thought there was just so much value in it. You know what I mean? I think one-on-one setting really makes you sharpen your skills, but you can't hide behind anything. If you really care about the person that you're working with and they're not getting better, what are you going to do? But you have to get better. It really forces you to push yourself. And I think also working the people skills and be one-on-one with all different kinds of people, all different kind of walks of life. And I think during that time, I just pushed myself and stayed up on, because obviously I wasn't training as many athletes in that setting. Yeah. But I just really stayed up on what was going on with that. Following people like yourself, Eric Cressy was a huge influence.
Oh yeah.
Boyle, obviously. A lot of these people that I was always just staying on top of everything. By the time we got to a point where I was training a lot of athletes, I didn't feel like I didn't know where I was.
Yeah. No, that's so cool. It's so funny too, because I wrote down as you were talking about that, you take a lot away. You're absolutely right. A lot of people look down on the corporate big box gym trainer, or they think that's like a lesser job if you're in our space or if you have a certain pedigree. But man, doing in-home one-on-one personal training for 3 years, like you said, number one, you get to learn about training a whole broad swath of different people. No two people are the same. Number one, you get comfortable with money,
which if you come from certain environments, right, whether it's your own personal background, whether it's an internship, you never have to ask people for money. But if you're going to go out and do your own thing, you got to get comfortable having the money discussion. And then, yeah, yep. just the whole being able to banter with people. And I used to always joke around, being in somebody's home, there is nothing longer than the 1 minute rest period with somebody that you have absolutely nothing in common with. You're just like, dude, what are we going to talk about? Oh, okay. Oh, it's been 30 seconds. Oh, let's just get into it.
Dude, you know, 100%.
So you got to learn, you got to learn how to negotiate that and have discussions with people that you have nothing in common with.
And you're right. That business aspect is huge. The sales, you have to sell yourself. Yeah. That's the thing. When you get in a health club, at least the where I was, it was like, all right, go on the floor, find clients. And that was not what I was prepared to do, but it was great that I was thrown in that fire and you learn how to, yeah, how to sell yourself. And then what ended up happening was, so I actually, when I was in school, I was captain of the rugby team. My co-captain was also in exercise science and also really passionate about it. And we, senior year, we're talking, and we're just like, hey, we should open up a gym someday. It's sort of this dream. You're guys talking in college. It doesn't seem real, but we're talking about it. But long story short, we both ended up personal training in Boston for that whole stretch of time. And then we both got just fed up with it, with the setting. And we also just wanted to help more people. It was like, we knew that we had something we could offer. And if you're personal training, you might be training 10 people in a day. That's a hard, long day.
Yeah, that's a rough day.
But you might only have 20 clients or something. That's, you're only helping 20 people.
Yeah.
And we just felt like there was, after seeing that private sector and seeing what some options were, we just felt like we could put something together and do it a lot better than what was going on around us. So we had a conversation and we were like, you know what? It's now or never. And we, yeah. I think in 2016, we pulled the trigger and opened up Flight.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, it's overwhelming and scary, but this is also like a piece of advice that I would always give interns, because I had a lot of interns over the years that were like, yo, I'm going to go. I love this. This is what I want to do for sure. I'm going to go open my own space. I'd say, look, please go take 6 months to a year and grind in one of those facilities. So you learn all those things, right? Because in an internship, it's easy. If something goes wrong, they're talking to me or they're talking to you. But if you're on your own, now you have to explain, no, this is what happened, or hey, this is what we're going to do next. So you make your mistakes on somebody else's dollar.
And, 100%. And
this entrepreneur I used to work with in home way back in the day told me that. He's, hey, dude, make your mistakes on somebody else's dollar and then go do your own thing. And I love that advice.
Yeah. How many years did you train yourself before you opened up IPAS?
Yeah, six. Six. Yeah. Okay. 2 years at Ball State where I was like a volunteer S&C coach. 3 years rehab / personal training, and then another 3 actually doing in-home. So I technically had 6 to 8, depending on how you want to think about it. But at that point, it's okay. Same deal. Look, man, I'm 30 now. Go time. It's like now or never. Mm-hmm. We didn't have kids. That's another factor that can play into
factor,
it. Right? Before you start layering complexity, right? Start the business and then layer that on. Okay. So one thing that I would love to hear from you, because we got a bunch of topics I want to touch on. One thing I would love to start with you is just, you train this broad mix of people, right? Like you said, you've got gin pop people, you've got athletes. Can you give me just like an overview of your training philosophy?
Yeah, I think my main philosophy is centered around just training the person in front of you and relying on principles to guide programming, which means not being married to any method or exercise. And I don't really care how I'm getting this person to their goals. It's all about getting them to their goals. And with that, I'm going to use whatever method I think is going to work the best based on my knowledge of exercise science, biomechanics, and my in the trenches experience.
So
the years of training myself and coaching other people. And then the other element is, who is this person psychologically? That's going to play a huge role in how you're going to go about your training, how you're going to talk to them, how you're going to cue them. So whether it's an athlete or gen pop, that's how I look at every person. And then the difference between training them is really just in the X's and O's and the exercise selection and the, how much am I filling each box with?
For sure. Oh, sorry. Not to cut you off. I'm just interested.
No, go ahead.
What is the environment like? Is it one-on-one, small group, large group?
So we do have a little bit of one-on-one. The majority of our model is what we call personalized small group training.
Yeah.
So essentially, it's each person, when they come in, they get a one-on-one session with a coach. based on that, how that coach goes, we're evaluating them. Also just seeing where they're at with different movement patterns, strength, fitness, all that. And so they get a personalized program, and when they can sign up for sessions throughout the day where there are going to be coaches on the floor to take them through that program.
Very cool.
And we keep it at a 1-to-6 client to coach ratio. And yeah, so I mean, the cool aspect of it is that the community, there'll be times where there's a 55-year-old Gen Pop client who's trying to lose weight, training right next to a high level 23-year-old professional rugby player.
And they're
right, just getting after it right next to each other, and they're all, and it's motivating.
Yeah. So it's interesting because we'll talk more about this later, but that's the exact kind of environment we have at iFast, in the sense that, hey man, it could be a retired person with a 40-year-old stay-at-home mom with a 24-year-old professional goalkeeper or race car driver.
Yeah.
And so people are like, how does that work? All of them have a specific thing they're focused on. And nobody walks in the gym with so much ego, like, oh, I'm better than them, whatever. It's no. If she's there to whatever drop 10 pounds and they're there to be a better gardener or be able to play with their like grandkids, there's so much respect universally. I'm sure it's the same way in your gym, right? So people just look around and they like respect the work that other people are doing.
100%. It's like what they, even if they are completely different in all the things in their personal life, what they have in common right there is that they're focused on something specific and they're doing it with intention, and they want to get better. And everyone, like you said, they're respecting the fact, oh, this person wants to get better too. And they're giving attention to what they're doing, and I'm going to show them respect.
You know?
And I think when other people see that, and they see that everyone's like that when they come in, it just starts, this breeds the community.
Yeah. No, I love it, man. Okay. So one thing that you mentioned earlier, and one thing I know you're passionate about, is exercise selection, which absolutely 100% me too. Love it. So now I want to know, why is choosing the right exercises so important for you?
Yeah, I think if you're, so one thing about the model too, just going back a little bit, is you're going to deal with people with pain. So that 55-year-old person has probably gone through some trauma in their life. There's been some damage. And if you can pick the right exercises, you can optimize their workout, even if they're in pain, if they've had injuries.
Yes,
and we can still drive performance. So I think if you're not really putting a large emphasis on exercise selection, there's just going to be a lot of missed opportunities. Not every exercise is created equally. I like to use the split squat as an example.
Yep.
So if we have somebody coming in and they have that typical pelvis sort of tip forward extension pattern, and I have them do a split squat, and you can see what's happening. Like they're pushing their hips farther back, they're driving their chest forward. They're trying to find their center of mass essentially.
Yeah.
But they're not using the target tissues that we're looking for.
Right.
So if I know that I can give them a front foot elevated split squat, I can elevate their heel, I can use them some cable assistance to allow them to get their center of mass backwards a little bit, get their pelvis and ribcage aligned, and now they can do the exercise and hit the target tissues I'm looking for, why would I just give them a split squat?
Right.
And that's how I look at all of programming, every exercise. If I can find what's going to be more optimal for them to hit the target tissues or just get whatever the goal is that I'm looking for out of that exercise, then I need to hit them where they're at. And sometimes you'll miss, sometimes think that this is the variation that's going to work and it doesn't really work and you're trying to coach through. And then that's where you have to have multiple other regressions, progressions, constraints that you can use to put in to make sure that we're making sure we're getting the best out of those exercises. And I just think it's so important that it can make somebody who comes into the gym with a little bit of pain, a previous injury, and you can make them have a great training session and not be in pain and feel great just because you pick the right exercises that are going to be good for them right now.
Yeah. Dude, I love that. If you're enjoying today's podcast and not already subscribed to the Robertson Training Systems newsletter, what are you waiting for? When you sign up, you'll get immediate access to materials that will help you write better programs, motivate people outside of the gym, and improve how your clients move and feel. Plus, the RTS newsletter is the only place where I announce up-and-coming events like virtual summits, live seminars, and my program design mentorship. And last but not least, I hate spam as much as you do, so I will only email you when I've got something valuable to deliver, something that will make you a better athlete, trainer, or coach. So if you're not already subscribed, head over to robertsontrainingsystems.com and register for our newsletter right now, today. Now, that's enough for me. Let's get back into this week's episode. So I actually shot this video a couple weeks back, and I think the thumbnail title was just Lazy Coaching, right? Mm-hmm. It was probably my best thumbnail idea that I've had, because YouTube's all about thumbnails and titles. I've learned this. It's not about the content. Yeah. They don't care. They want the thumbnail. But it's me, like, kick back, sunglasses on. But the whole point of that is that when you use a constraints-based approach, you have to coach less, right? And that should be the goal. If you're trying to give 20 cues, and I've made this mistake. Look, so please don't think I'm, like, preaching from a pulpit here. The part of the reason I learned this is 2006, 2007, I've got one of the most unathletic groups of young men in front of me, and I'm trying to teach all of them how to back squat. A well-executed back squat, man, there's 15, 20 steps. And about this time is when, this is, again, this is dating me, but this is when Dan John started talking about the goblet squat. He's like, look, it's so easy. You grab the kettlebell, and literally it's two cues, and they got it. And I was like, I'm sold. That was like my first instance of constraints-based coaching. But you're absolutely right. If you can find the right tool, the right constraint, or the right exercise, it just makes your life so much easier. It's easier for you. It's more productive and valuable for them, and they feel more successful. It's like a win-win.
And that's the thing. Them feeling successful is huge too, right? Like, you want them to feel good about themselves. That builds momentum and that builds confidence. And then now they're going to train harder with that. There's something, and I'm not like against Olympic lifts by any means, but it's a kind of a point I use to teach to coaches a lot is with a lot of times you will have these athletes and coaches want to put them into Olympic, like they have one season to train hard basically.
Right.
And we want to throw in these Olympic lifts, and it is so technical, so hard to execute.
Yeah.
And it's probably going to take them so long to really be able to be proficient enough to get the stimulus that we're looking for out of that.
For sure.
So why wouldn't I just give them something easier? that's going to be put them in a good position to be successful and get what I want out of that exercise for them.
Yeah. It's all about ROI, dude. And I know you know this, but if I got somebody for 4 or 5 years, if I'm in a D1 football environment and I'm going to have this kid for 5 years, by all means, I'm going to teach him that.
Right.
You're right. If I got 2 months, do I want to spend 20 to 30 minutes every session tweaking and refining the lifts? And again, this is not hating or bashing Olympic lifting because I love them. I use them. I got great friends and coaches that use them as well. But when it comes down to it, sometimes you just got to be really like targeted in what you spend your time on.
And it's also being, sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead. No, go ahead.
But it's also being willing to ditch it when it's not working.
Yeah.
Like some people, you don't want to admit that you're wrong, but you know, at certain times it's like, all right, we've spent a month on this and there hasn't really been progress with our technique and being able to get to a point where, so it's gotta be willing to take that step and move to something else.
Yeah.
Swallow your pride a little bit.
Exactly. I was going to say swallowing your pride, ditching your ego, and just becoming less tethered to certain exercises. And I think part of that is the longer you do this, the more you realize like there's, unless you're a power lifter or an Olympic lifter, there are no lifts you have to do in a gym. Yeah. If you're a Gen Pop client, yeah, absolutely. If you get the training effect you want, great. Okay, so let's flip this on its head because I know you've mentored and worked with a lot of young coaches. What are some of the biggest mistakes that people make with regard to exercise selection?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing you see is going into what I talked about a little bit earlier. It's not having those progressions in that regression chart in your head.
Yeah.
You have to know, here's where this person is. This is where they should start. This is where the next step is. And then there's also a bunch of little steps in between those two steps. And I think being able to do that is so important to be able to bring someone from that kind of beginner stage to real high level progression. And I think there's also the people who just are, they can't get out of their own bias. They can't really ask the, what am I really looking for here? They're just tied to what was successful for them as an athlete.
That's a big
one. What was successful in with one of the clients they coached and all that stuff. And not really asking the questions of maybe why that was successful for you and why it might not be successful for this person.
No, I like that.
So I think that's something that we try to do when we're developing coaches is just keep having them step back and try to look at what is the spectrum here that we're looking at when this person is in this category. And then maybe on this side, it's high level athlete or high level power lifter. And then it's this person needs to be in this spot. And what is the difference between the kinds of exercises that might work with this person that are not going to work with this person, and here's why.
Yeah. No, I like that a lot. And something that I think I preached for quite a while now is this idea of having progressions, regressions baked into what you do, taking the time. And I had people early on that were like, do you just really sit down and write all this out? I'm like, yes. When you're starting out, yes. Mm-hmm. When eventually the model gets to a point for whatever activity, right? A squat, a deadlift, a split squat. You're like, okay, I know this is how I want it to look. I don't think this exercise will work. And you can get more creative. But it's the difference between when you first start baking stuff and you mm-hmm. got this strict recipe. And then you become like my wife and you're like a ninja and she's, I don't need a recipe. I just know a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And it tastes amazing. Like it takes you time to get there, but you start by like color by number first. Mm-hmm. Start with the basics, start with the foundational stuff, and then get more interpretive and more creative as you go.
It's sort of that, like you have to know the rules before you can break them.
Yes.
And it's, so for that first, if you're a beginner coach, beginner, you know, to the field, start at the simplest progression. Start there and then build your way up. And then if, as you get more experience, you'll be able to put people in little different categories and be able to maybe skip a few steps, but, and really hit it right on the nail right where they are. But for now, start basic and then progress from there. Yeah. You got to know what that chart is.
Yeah, it definitely helps. And it just makes life so much easier. If you're a young coach listening, take the time, do this now, just flesh it out because it will make your life easier and less stressful.
And then you have that confidence of if you are struggling, like you were talking about with you're trying to cue all these things, then you're good. You know that there's other options. I can move to this. I can move to that.
And like you said, still get a training effect. Somebody doesn't feel like, oh, I just can't do this or I'm excluded from this. No, like we'll just customize this and figure out what works best for you and your body.
Yeah.
Very simple. Okay. So something else I know that you're passionate about, and obviously I think we are very similar in the sense that similar backgrounds, similar timelines, but I know you're passionate about growing like the next generation of great coaches. And that's something I've talked about a lot here lately on the show. So let's just start with that. Why are you passionate about that?
I think it's a bunch of reasons. I think if you fall in love with coaching people, I think you fall in love with teaching. Yes. Coaching, that's how we should be looking at it. Like we're teaching them something so that they can do things themselves. And I think that, so that's definitely a big aspect of it, that I just think that it's the next level of teaching. And now when you look around at the industry, and I would actually say that the industry is progressing a lot quicker for the most part, but you know, you look around and there's a lot of garbage. There's a lot of garbage, a lot of low quality and a lot of lazy coaching, like you said. So I think with something that I'm so passionate about and I am so passionate about teaching, it just, that's the most rewarding thing to me, that once I built some career capital and really put in my work and my time and years of coaching, years of training myself on that kind of under the bar experience, which I think is so important. It just that now this is the thing that is, I've found is equally as rewarding, if not more rewarding, to build other people up. And then not only are you building those people up, but you're also building the field up. And you're elevating the bar a little bit. And I think as far as I try to be intentional about the impact that I'm making, when I want to make as big of an impact as possible. And I think that this is something that you can really make a even bigger impact than the clients and coaches or clients and athletes you're coaching every day.
Absolutely. I just thought of it as a huge lever, right?
Yeah.
So you had the realization early on that, hey man, I can grind and in one day I can see 8 to 10 people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now let's take that and assume you can positively impact 10 coaches. Now all those people are seeing 8 to 10. Now you're impacting 80 to 100 people.
Exactly.
So that was always the thing for me. It's, hey, here's a way to leverage and scale what I'm doing and positively impact more people. How are you doing that? Are you just doing that through the internship? Is that like the biggest focus for you right now and like the coaches on your staff?
Yes, the internship is definitely big. I think something that's, I don't know how unique it is, but it's just something we put a lot of attention to is we have obviously like weekly staff meetings where we're going over all the new people, anybody's injuries, anything like that. But then we also have weekly continuing education where me or one of our coaches is presenting on a topic and we move down on all the way from, you know, everywhere around with strength and conditioning. But we go and we try to zero in really deep, get as high level as possible. And so it sort of just brings the bottom up. So for that new coach that's coming in who doesn't have as much experience with maybe some of the language or stuff we're talking about, it gets them to start to listen a little differently and look at things a little differently quicker. And we just continue to have those conversations every week. And I think it really helps develop, continue to develop our staff. And that's something we're really focused on. And we're looking to take that in the near future into something that's a little bit more broad, do a little more seminar kind of style stuff, more putting that out as more of a kind of finished product of all the curriculum that we've created with our internship and our continued coach development.
Dude, that would be sick. I just think you're making me a little nostalgic here for like peak IFAST before we switch gears and move to more independent contracting. Yo, Mondays were long days because a lot of times I would coach. We'd have staff meeting for an hour. Then we'd have staff training for an hour, which was like me, Bill, and our staff generally what you were doing. Either somebody's presenting or it's like open forum Q&A discussion. Mm-hmm. That was intellectually pretty stimulating. And then after that, we do intern training. So, yeah, I mean, there was a lot going on there. And again, peak Monday for interns is like, here's a lecture or a lecture hands-on. Wednesday, we would make them present it back to us. Yeah, we were awful. By the end, we had all the things because you have the kid that's like sleeping on Monday. You're like, hey, bro, guess what? You get to present on Wednesday. Talk to me about how to coach a squat. Yep. So we flipped it. And then Friday would just be like, okay, let's get in the gym and do some hands-on work. So I love it. I think that's so powerful and so impactful because, again, I was talking about this with somebody the other day. It's, man, like the curriculums and the background experience these kids should have coming out now, like they didn't have S&C as a major when I was in school. It was like exercise science, and I learned how to do cardiac stuff and like body comp. But training, zero. Yeah. They should have so much of that, and they're still not getting a lot of that, I feel like, in their undergraduate curriculum.
Yeah, and I think that's where with our internship curriculum, we're very deliberate about having it be like equal parts. We work 2 hours with them one-on-one or one-on-two or something like that.
Yeah.
And there were 1 hour of that is, or hour and a half of that is lecture, hour and a half of that is practical. And it's all, and we're taking them through every single exercise that's in our library going in-depth, cueing, concepts, and leaving that kind of that form open for conversation and questionings. And they're definitely not getting that in school from what we've seen. I'm with you, but they need it.
They need it. And part of it too is, okay, so if you're not getting it at school, you go somewhere else, which is generally social, which like you said, the Wild West, depending on who they're following. And I've had some coaches go as far as to say that when people started interning, they would literally ask the interns, hey, who are you following fitness-wise? They would find out. If they didn't know who they were, they would find out, right? And say, okay, this person's legit. This person is not. And then, by the way, here are like five people you need to be following right now that will help fast-track this. Because if you're going to be on it anyways, at least make it a valuable resource.
100%. 100%.
Very cool. Okay. So you've been doing this for a while now. What are some lessons that you've learned about educating young coaches and helping them really get the most out of their time and their experience with you?
Yeah, so many things because I've made so many mistakes over the years. As we all have. One thing is definitely catering to different learning styles. Some people do a lot better pushing them more in toward that practical side of things and putting them in the fire a little bit more, making them do those kind of presentations and stuff. But, and then some people really like to want to talk through every concept and they want to go through, have a, ask a lot of questions and that kind of thing. I do think that one thing I really had to learn and I think I've gotten a little bit better at it is just being really patient at some level. Trying to remember what it was like to be that age. Some of these kids are 20 and in your head as in someone who's putting so much into educating them, you're what's going on? Sometimes you're like, what's going on with this kid? And I think that if I look at who I was as a 20-year-old, I wasn't always my best self. So I think that just giving them a little bit of grace, a little bit of patience, also hold, but still holding them to a high standard has been something I just really had to learn that some people are also just going to take a little bit longer for things to click and they need a little bit more in the trenches experience for those things to really connect. And then once that connects, then they can really feel confident and make it theirs a little bit.
Yeah. I think one of the things that has taken me a while to learn and accept is that at point A, when you do your internship, you're whatever years old, right? 20, 21, 22. I was 22. The older you get, the further away from that time and place you are, right? Yeah. I know this is common sense, but I'm 45 now. So that was 23 years ago that I did my internship. You just have this massive disconnect because you know where you're at now. You might know the steps, but you forget at some level what it's like to be that 21, 22 year old kid. That's where you have to take a step back, humble yourself, chill out. would be advice to myself too, because there's sometimes, dude, how many times can we go over this? But hey, man, at least they're willing to ask those questions and they're willing to put themselves out there. So yeah, that's what 100%. You have to remember. Hey, you didn't have it all figured out at 21 or 22 either.
Yeah, and far from it. and maybe I was less organized. I don't know. So it's, yeah, I have to take myself back 100% and be like, oh, wait, what was I like at this age? Yep, okay. Oh, all right.
I know. I was a dumb. So I can't even imagine what it was like to have me as an intern. Okay, so as we are going back and forth, before this call, we had this really interesting side discussion that I'm fascinated by because it very much parallels IFAST. What you mentioned there was that you have deliberately not niched down your gym. So you're not going to say, we just train baseball or football or gin pop or rugby. You've got all these people in your gym. Now, I know all the marketing gurus that are 23 years old that are hitting you up telling you how they're going to blow up your IG and TikTok would say, Dylan, you got to niche down. But you chose not to. So explain to me why you've deliberately chosen not to niche down.
Yeah. For one thing, it's we don't believe we're just good at training one population. And I think, like I said, getting a little bit of a taste of both in that private sector, seeing that gym pop and then, you know, what it's like to work with gym pop people and then what it's like to work with athletes, having that experience of personal training for years with the gym pop people, you realize I just like helping people. And if I believe that I can help this person maybe better than the next guy, or I just believe I can deliver a really good service to this person, I'm not going to turn them down. And I believe that what it takes is just a little more effort and a little bit more. You have to really train the expertise of your coaches. But, you know, we knew that there's going to be a sacrifice with marketing. It's hard. It's who are you really talking to? Who are you putting out there? There's definitely some challenges there. Some challenges with scaling, as far as it's a lot easier if everyone's kind of the same to just be like, okay, we can give this sort of templated-ish program. But when you can't do that templated program when you're training a 65-year-old person in pain next to a 20-year-old athlete. So it definitely creates some challenges, but it was really important to us to be able to serve all these populations. And we felt like all it takes is a little bit more attention to detail and a little bit more effort towards development. I actually think there's a lot of value also as well in your personal development with seeing all kinds of different people. Like I've seen every kind of person and almost every kind of injury, every kind of sport. And I think that builds up your abilities as a coach more than anything else compared to me just training rugby players for 10 years. I don't know who's a better coach. You know what I mean? That's how I look at the internship and just our coaches in general. I want them to leave. If they move on to do something else, or just our interns end up, you know, we don't hire them, they do something else. I want them to feel like they could train any kind of person at a high level. Yeah. And that's because they have these principles in place. They know where they need to go with people. They know what buckets they need to fill with certain groups. And then it's all about just looking at the person in front of you and really analyzing what they need.
Yeah. You know what you're doing in the way I think about this? We've all heard of long-term athletic development, right? You're literally doing like long-term coaching development. Because if you ever chose to specialize in one thing, imagine how broad a set of experiences you have. It would be so easy for you to just say, I'm just going to train rugby now. And you've got all these experiences, all these random situations that you've been in over the years that you can pull from, right? Oh, this person can't do this. Oh, Betty from 10 years ago, she couldn't do that. You have such a broad base and such a strong foundation going forward. That's exactly the way I did things and the way that I've tried to espouse a lot of the things we do at IFAST. Hey, man, we're going to make you an absolute savage. Mm-hmm. And try and teach you how to train all these different people, different populations, different needs, different goals. Whenever you do choose to specialize in one area of coaching, should you choose to do that, you can be an absolute monster in it. So I love that, man. That's great.
100%. And I think it was also one of these things that it happened naturally as well, as we were personal training for those years and we took all our clients. And it's like, what are we going to tell them that, no, we're an athlete gym now, go away?
Right.
Let's, no. no, I can take care of these people. I can take care of these athletes. We can do it together, and we can create a very unique community that in some ways is actually more driven toward the same goal.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, it comes back to that idea of the culture and community that you can develop in those kinds of spaces is very unique.
Yeah.
Not to say it's better or worse than anywhere else. If you're Eric Cressy and you've got hundreds of baseball players, that's amazing. Our communities are very cool in their own right. It's just different.
Yeah.
And so I know I enjoy that. And intellectually, it's very stimulating.
100%.
Because, again, it's not homogenized. It's not like this template approach because, oh, hey, here's my 50 golfers today. No, I got all these different people. You're constantly having to be switched on, learn new things, and get better.
And I think you learn a lot more about life.
Yeah, for sure. Because
you're talking to so many kinds of different people, different ages, different experience, different life experience that I don't think I would have learned all that if I had emphasized just training younger athletes and that kind of thing.
So yeah.
I'm just very thankful to have those experiences as well.
And here's a piece of advice to young coaches that are listening, regardless of where you think you want to end up, right? So if you want to go be the next Eric Cressy, go for it. If you want to be the next Joe Kinn and dominate football, go do that. But before you do that, do an internship in a well-rounded facility first.
Mm-hmm.
Get that broad base of experiences because it will help you down the line. And the other thing that's cool, it doesn't happen all the time, but there are times where I've had interns that coming in, right? Like an entry interview. They're like, oh yeah, I want to work in sport performance. Da, da, da. And then they get around Gen Pop people and they're like, yo, these people are way more interesting. They're 100%. Like, I don't want to be in sports anymore. Now, again, that doesn't happen all the time, but you never get that understanding or that experience if you don't seek out an internship that's very broad and well-rounded to start.
100%. Totally with you on that.
Okay, man. Big question time.
Okay.
If you could alter the space-time continuum and give young Dylan Gutile one piece of advice, what would it be?
One piece of advice is always hard.
I know. Oh, it's like I would give a lot. Thing, right?
Yeah.
It's the one thing.
I think I'm going to answer this very similar to how Alex, one of our previous interns and coaches who was on your show very recently, answered it.
Yep.
And I think I would push myself to make myself a little more uncomfortable when I was younger. Honestly, I would answer it the same way. It's just there are certain things, certain skills I had wished I had developed younger. And especially that when now you're running a business and it's just we didn't go to school for business. So we didn't know what the hell we were doing. And there were so many things I just wish I had. Public speaking, some business stuff that I just wish I had really pushed myself into when I was younger. And when I look back at it, it was sort of out of ego and fear and you know what I mean? And that's just so stupid. I wish I would have told myself to swallow my ego and push myself a little more in that respect.
Yeah. I think there's also like a safety/preservation built into that. Like we all fear something, right? So stepping into that sometimes can be really hard, especially willfully. It's one thing if you got to learn marketing or you got to learn sales because you run a business. But if you're not comfortable with that and you don't have to do it, like, do I really want to do that? Nah, I'm good. Oh, I have to pay bills.
Mm-hmm.
I got rent 100%. Due in 2 weeks, so I got to make some sales.
Okay, and that's what it turned into.
It's like, yeah, absolutely.
It's 100% what it turns into.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Last but not least, lightning round. So four fairly short questions. Your answer can be as long or short as you like. Number one. Bro, what do you have against doing like 1,000 reps of foo ab work? You don't like ab circuits? What's the matter, man?
It's funny. That post is really all, to me, it's all about being intentional. So there's a guy I like to flopping around on the ground and stuff. But in reality, it really is about being intentional with everything you're doing and just trying to scream that as loud as I can at how important that is compared to just doing a bunch of garbage.
Yeah. Oh, man. I used to have couple soccer players when I worked with the Indy 11, they would come into the gym, and I'll just put that in air quotes because it was our old space. They wouldn't come into the actual training area where we were doing the real work. They'd hang out on the turf side and do ab circuits for 30 minutes. Meanwhile, the coach is bitching to me because he's, dude, this guy looks so slow or this guy's so out of shape. I'm like, hey, all he's got to do is step over to this other side and I can help him out. But yes, I'm with you. It's way easier to do 1,000 sets of crunches than it is to come in and put in real work in the gym.
100%.
Okay. Number two, I love questions like this. What are the biggest changes? Maybe biggest changes you made in your programming over the past 1 to 2 years? How are you changing? How are you evolving?
Yeah, there's a lot of little things that I think I've gotten a greater understanding of and sort of deeper development, even on little queuing things and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I would say the biggest big, if I'm just looking big picture change, simple, I think I overall less strength volume. And I would say with athletes and gen pop people, and you can imagine I have a powerlifting background. I feel like I was pretty intentional about not letting that like influence my coaching.
For sure.
But still, I think that there's this idea that these people need a certain amount of volume and blah, blah. And I've just realized that it's so much less than I thought it was. I think for athletes as well, particularly like in season, they don't need that much. It really a minimal effective dose is sometimes really the way to go, and just emphasizing more their recovery and their nutrition and things like that. So I would say definitely like overall a little less volume, and I've seen how people feel is just a little bit better, and then more of an emphasis on energy systems work.
Okay.
And I think for adults and athletes, I think for athletes, it was more just, okay, putting a little bit more in that bucket and a little less in strength. And I think we always did a pretty good job of having all the change of direction and speed work in there, but just a little less strength, a little more conditioning. And then with Gen Pop, we just didn't emphasize that as much because it wasn't as specific. There was nothing they needed to use their energy systems for.
Right.
But then in the last couple of years, just realizing how much better people feel if they have that build up that aerobic base and they build up that kind of that energy system work. And they don't need quite as much volume to drive stimulus for the most part.
Yeah. A little goes a long way for that population, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Number three, what's your favorite moment as a coach so far? Do you have a highlight, something that stands out?
That's so hard.
Give me the one thing. I know it's hard.
Yeah. Asking a musician what their favorite song is. But I would say I was thinking about this kind of long and hard. And I think the moment that I came up with was something that was actually very recent. So we every year since we opened Flight, we've done a Thanksgiving Day workout. And so it's the one time where we do really like a more, no matter what, it's like just boot camp style.
Yeah.
Like we just come in, everyone, no matter who it is, they just come in, we do a group workout. And Thanksgiving Day, people got stuff to do.
Sure.
They're cooking all day. They got family, whatever. Generally, we get 10 to 20 people, maybe a little bit more, 30, whatever. And this year, when we actually just moved into a new place in the last 9 months from Newton to Waltham, and we had 55 people there, and
it was
just such a good mix of athletes, family, clients and all their friends. And it gave that little bit. I'm not very good at reflecting on what I've done well ever. I'm pretty critical of myself, I would say. So it was just a moment where I looked around and really appreciated the community that's been built. And it made me feel good from a perspective of the thing we were talking about, like impact. And that's like the ultimate goal. And I think it was one moment where I realized pretty cool.
Those are the moments it's hard. If you're a certain type of personality, I think we're pretty similar.
Yeah,
really hard,
like it.
But it's where you got to just pause, take a breath, reflect. Yo, this is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty cool, right? Okay. Last but not least, number four. What's next for Dylan Gutow? What are you working on? What are you excited about? Anything?
Yeah, like you mentioned, I think as I'm coaching a little bit less, I'm not on the floor as much as I used to be. I'm finding myself spending more and more time on continuing education stuff. So building that out, building curriculum for our interns, doing that better and better, continuing to develop our coaches, and then looking to create something that serves as a roadmap for strength and conditioning coaches to work with clients and ultimately do speaking stuff and put that out a little bit more. But I think I'm always going to coach. I'm always going to be on the floor at some level. That's something that is really important to me. But I think I would say the next step is diving deeper into that, those next levels of development and trying to create a better and better system that people can use.
I love it, man. Well, Dylan, this has been amazing. I knew it would be, but you lived up to the hype. So shout out to Alex for putting us together. But in all seriousness, where can my listeners find out more about you and the great work that you're doing?
Yes, on Instagram, Dylan_FPF. For Flight Performance, it's Flight_Performance. And flightperformanceandfitness.com. Be the best places.
I love it. I'll make sure I get all those links in the show notes. So if you are listening at home, you can connect with Dylan. And man, Dylan, again, thank you so much, my friend. This is amazing.
Thank you so much for having me on, Mike. I really appreciate it.
All right, my friends, that does it for this week's episode with Dylan Gutiel. Really hope you enjoyed it. Man, what an awesome human being. Man, that was so much fun. I had not actually interacted with Dylan leading up to the show other than the usual like texts and emails just prepping for the show. So big shout out to former podcast guest Alex Hubblebank for introducing us. Awesome human beings all around. And I hope you enjoyed the show. I think there were some really key moments there. I love talking exercise selection. I think that's such a critical piece of the puzzle. So I love diving in there. I love talking about developing young coaches, because that's obviously something that I've been passionate about my entire career, and I'm still passionate about it to this day. And I also really like that idea of not niching down, and maybe that's because we don't do that. I definitely know that it lowers the ability to leverage and scale what you do, because everything is more custom. It's a little bit more detail-oriented. It's a little bit more unique, but hey man, that's okay. I like to think of what I do as like small batch coffee. I'm not trying to put it out there to the masses. I am for a very distinct coffee consumer, or in this case, a very specific trainer, coach, or athlete. So if you enjoyed today's episode, please do me one small favor. We are on the big three. There's probably more podcast places out there, but it is getting consolidated in the three big ones where you can follow the show: Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Great thing about YouTube too, you get the video. So if you ever want to see the interactions between myself and the guests, you can watch the full show there. So please subscribe to the show if you're not already, so you know each and every week when a new episode drops. So my friend, as always, thank you so much for your support. Love and appreciate you. This show wouldn't be what it is today without you. So thank you so much. And we will be back next week with our next episode. Take care.